Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. We took a week off to cook out with family and friends as much as we hope you did. Actually, I can't speak for that. In fact, we didn't do that at all. So I don't know. Maybe my cohorts did. Mac McIntyre, did you cook out with family and friends?
I did not.
Okay. Eric
Ashley. I enjoyed the air conditioning.
Well, that's not a bad option. Eric Ashley, your cookout?
We had a picnic outside. Did not see any fireworks, however.
That's a shame. Daryl, how about you? Did you hit any of the Americana checkboxes there?
I keep neither family nor friends.
Excellent.
So, but I did have a hamburger.
Okay, well, so. I think that's tabulating the math here. You win, Daryl. Yeah. Your hamburger puts you over the top.
Great.
We're back, and let's get right into it. Mac, did you see anything? I'm assuming you got out to see The Amazing Spider-Man. Is that a correct assumption?
You are correct, yes.
I am interested to hear what you, as a big Spidey fan, as one of the few folks I know who really enjoyed Spider-Man 3, I'm very interested to see your take on this reboot.
I really enjoyed it. I'll admit it is different from the Spider-Man that I'm used to. It made a lot of sort of tweaks to the mythology that I was iffy on.
Now, is this based on anything like Ultimate Spider-Man or any of that stuff?
Well, yes and no. I mean, they hit the basics of the origin story the same as everyone else does. It's just a lot of the little details are different. So a lot of folks have been comparing this to Batman Begins, but I'm not so sure that's fair, because the difference between this and the Sam Raimi Spider-Man is nothing compared to the difference between Batman Begins and Batman and Robin.
Right.
Those films are night and day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think the trick is to just actually not try to do the comparison thing. You know, you just got to go in, you got to tell yourself, okay, this is a whole new interpretation of Spider-Man, right? It's not the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, it's not the comic Spider-Man, it's not Ultimate Spider-Man, it's not Turn Off the Dark Spider-Man or any of those others. This is, you know, it's a whole new take on the character.
Now, is it like really dramatic? I mean, I watched it as well, but, you know, I defer to you as far as the canon and the history goes, but is it really, like, dramatically different, or is it just kind of different by degrees? At least that's what it felt like. It was kind of different by degrees from the Tobey Maguire. You know, he wasn't as pathetic as the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, you know, and a few other kind of personality traits. But I'm just wondering, was it, like, a dramatically different retelling?
I think, like I said, I think all the basics are the same. It's the little details that are different. Yeah. Like I said, this one sort of plays up his intellectualism and sort of, you know, plays down his sort of bad luck aspect of the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This one plays up a little bit more of him as a wisecracker. You know, it's just little differences like that. You know, he has the mechanical web shooters instead of the the ones from the movie, and so on and so forth. And we can go on and on about the little differences. So.
How about Lizard? What did you think of Lizard?
It was okay. It looked really different from the comics, but again, I try to have an open mind and say, okay, this is a new version. It worked all right for me. I wish he would have kept the white lab coat on for more of the movie, because I think that made him a little more visually interesting. Other than that, you know, he's just kind of a big green guy. But for the most part, he worked. You know, I mean, he's a giant lizard that throws stuff around. You know, there's not a whole lot of personality there.
So how does this one rank? Like, I know they're different, but did you enjoy it more than the Sam Raimi ones, or is it just apples and oranges for you?
Yeah, it's hard to go on the whole, again, you know, doing the comparison thing is kind of the pathway to madness, but I really enjoyed the first two Sam Raimi movies. I think, you know, they got enough right that where I think, yes, that's my Spider-Man. That's the Spider-Man that I know. I did go back a few years later and revisited Spider-Man 3, and yeah, the flaws are a lot more apparent the more times I've seen it. So I would rate this kind of in between Spider-Man 1 and 2, and but above Spider-Man 3. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I did enjoy it. Let's not get that wrong. You know, I did enjoy the movie. I think there's a lot to enjoy there. It was a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend it.
And it was dunst free, which is always good. Eric and Daryl, did you guys see it?
I saw it.
You did, okay.
Yeah,
Daryl,
yeah.
You have not?
No, I have not, but I don't care. You know, spoil it up if you need to.
All right. Eric, your take.
I actually recorded an entire podcast about it, so I'll keep it short.
And listen to the other podcast for the
in-depth
one, yes.
Sure. But I agree with Mac. I liked it too. It's definitely been a very polarizing movie, kind of surprisingly so. a lot of differences of opinion and a lot of really violently negative opinions online, which I guess isn't out of step with any movie ever. But you know, coming from like critics, it seems like it's definitely divisive. I had a lot of fun with it. I think it's a movie that if it sucks you in, you're not going to mind its kind of flaws. But I think it kind of starts to unravel under scrutiny, which, you know, is fine. Like, if you enjoy it, like I did, I didn't, you know, notice it. Talking about it later, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess that didn't make a lot of sense. And, yeah, I guess that didn't. But I still had fun. So so I liked it a lot. I think like the Batman Begins comparison, it's a little shaky, but I think it's more just the it's not the same as Batman Begins. It's not as good as Batman Begins. Just compared to the Raimi movies, there's not a whole lot of difference. Like Max said, it's more like surface level stuff, little details here and there. But I think they did a pretty good job of grounding it, is sort of the wrong word, but kind of making everything flow organically from the character. I like the science aspect of it. I liked that all the reasons why everything happened, even though they didn't really go into his parents that much, I think, it all made sense. It wasn't just some random accident in the lab. It kind of tied into things that were true about the character. So I liked that. And I thought the actors were great.
Though I do think Flash may be bipolar.
He might be. That was like kind of weird. There was
several personalities throughout the film.
Yeah. I mean,
he was sadistic, and then he was, you know, he'd break down in tears. You know.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that when you step back, when you're caught up in the moment, it's like, okay, that's fine. But when you step back, like, wait, that seems like they may have felt that a little bit. And you know, it seems like there are a lot of reports coming out that they really like recut it a lot, like in just at the very end. Where there are TV spots apparently currently airing that show stuff that's not in the movie.
Oh, nice.
major stuff from the sort of missing or at least heavily cut down storyline of what happened to his parents and how that might have tied into him.
Gotcha.
But I definitely enjoy it. I mean, this is all, I think, we'll probably all kind of forget it in a week or so, but for now.
I think I'm with you guys, and I probably find it maybe just a little more forgettable than you guys. I mean, I don't think it was bad, and I got, like you said, Eric, you know, watching it, I kind of got caught up. I liked Andrew Garfield a lot. Like, I really liked his stuff. I thought he was pretty good in that. I liked Emma Stone. I thought she was good. Not to be too shallow, but the action scenes didn't, at least actually the big action scene at the end did very little for me.
Yeah, and
the rest of the ending on the bridge is kind of cool, but yeah, the whole ending kind of just didn't really measure up. I thought. I thought it was a pretty cool fight with a lizard in the school. I mean, they didn't broad daylight. And that's always a risk when you bring out a entirely CGI. Though I thought CGI Spider-Man looked pretty good. You know, that's one comparison. If you look at the Raimi film, CGI Spider-Man looks like CGI Spider-Man. I thought they did a pretty good job of this. So I don't know. So I think it's one of those. I think I'm with you. It's a movie I enjoyed watching, and I don't harbor any ill will for it taking my $9 or whatever it cost to watch it, but I don't know if it's going to have the staying power for me. So,
yeah, I can't really imagine seeing it again at some point. It's not. I probably will forget it too. But,
Okay, Mac, anything else?
You want? That was the big news for me, I guess. Good old Spidey.
All right. Daryl, let's get your voice.
I did see Prometheus in the theater. I think I hadn't seen that last time I was on this.
All right. And thoughts?
I enjoyed it actually quite a bit.
All right. Another polarizing movie, by the way.
Another polarizing movie, yeah. I thought it was nicely made, and the performances and the writing were a little bit clunky. But I liked the overall look. I liked the fact that he used some Geiger paintings that he didn't use in Alien, which is a big H.R. Geiger fan, is a little treat for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way it all tied together in the same sort of way that that Alien Resurrection tied things together. And Alien Resurrection is a movie that I have spent the last 12 years or whatever defending when nobody listens to me. So
that's a noble cause. that's an uphill battle, but yeah. I did like the offspring alien getting sucked piece by piece out of the hole in the ship. That was,
mm-hmm.
It was good times.
Yeah. And it was my first 3D movie as well.
Oh.
because I've never felt the need to pay $13 to go see a movie. But broke down and did it. And it was, the 3D was cool, but in the end it makes my eyes tired, and I can't imagine I'm going to spend $13 on something like that very many more times.
So then overall, so overall, Prometheus, positive for you, yes?
Totally positive. Okay. Totally positive.
All right. Eric, anything you want to add to your Spider-Man input?
No, I think I'm done with Spider-Man. We did...
you do have some old news. I saw that you had rewatched an old movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
I don't know what you guys are, and then, Eric, I'm going to just kind of maybe read your mind, but like, I am at the point now where it is a feverish pitch waiting for July 20th to arrive.
Absolutely.
It is getting bad right now.
I basically, like, I don't know, over the course of like 2 days, I went from, I'm looking forward to Dark Knight Rises, to being like, when is this coming out? I want to see it now.
That's right.
And I don't know what it was. I mean, part of it, oddly enough, I think the thing that kicked it off was the trailer, which I'd seen, you know, many times before Spider-Man. And all of a sudden, it was like, I got chills when I saw it. I won't lie.
Now, was that the Nokia trailer? The Nokia trailer really did it for me. I don't know if the Nokia.
I've pretty much, like, after the whatever, not their most recent trailer, but the last, like, biggish one.
Yeah.
I'm kind of cutting myself off.
Sequestering yourself. That's smart.
For the most part. Now as you alluded to, I went back and rewatched Dark Knight last night because I needed some Batman.
So you needed a fix. That's right.
I gotta watch, and I'd watched Batman Begins maybe about a month ago, and it's been a while since I've seen Dark Knight, so I figured I'd watch it, and maybe it's part of the Batman fever, but like, every time I watch that movie, I have fewer and fewer problems with it. I know that when I first talked about it, and part of it was because I saw it initially in a theater with a really bad sound, so I missed a lot of the nuances, and that's a pretty dense story. There's a lot going on.
Right, right.
Yeah. So now at this point, I know what to expect, and man, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
I've been Empire Magazine. Their website has been streaming. They may still be streaming the entire soundtrack to Dark.
I didn't want to go in there. Because soundtracks are notorious for spoiling things, you know, like...
Yeah, this one seems to be fine. Like
Star Wars, I remember Star Wars Phantom Menace. Like, before the movie released, they released a soundtrack, and one of the tracks was the death of Qui-Gon, you know? Right. Qui-Gon's death. Okay, great.
And they, in the write-up for the post where they have the soundtrack, the new soundtrack, they actually say, you know, we went through it, and there's nothing that says the death of Qui-Gon. So they actually make reference to it. It's all very ambiguous. I think it's safe. You know, you don't have to, but, and it, you know, it sounds like another Hans Zimmer score, and it's good, and it gets my, gets my heart rate up.
Right.
I ordered, I guess it's the newest edition of, Nightfall Volume 1, which I've never read.
My minuscule comic book reading. I devoured the whole Nightfall. I read the novelization too.
I guess before they had whatever the first like major Bane stuff, and I only know the bare bones of the story, maybe broken up into several trades. This is like, I guess, collects more of it than they had before. It's like 600 some pages.
It's like two volumes, and it's split up into these two huge volumes.
Yeah, so this, I guess they're releasing, you know, to go with a movie, they've released at least the first two volumes, and they're releasing the third one. Anyway, so I'll have that, and I got this, and I'm just like, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, word is, like, Anne Hathaway is awesome in this, which, if that happens, then... You know, cats and dogs are living together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people, and maybe not me because I wasn't paying attention, but a lot of people thought maybe Heath Ledger wasn't a great choice for the Joker, and then it was awesome. And I'm not saying that Anne Hathaway is going to be Heath Ledger as the Joker, because that's impossible. But yeah, why not? Christopher Nolan can get good performances out of people you would not expect it from.
I think, just like Twitter feeds from screenings have just been, and you know, again, I'm like you, I'm sequestering, but you know, just generally talking, standing ovations, people in tears at the end, this and that. Yeah. So it's like, goodness gracious, I don't know. Yeah, like we're scheduled to go on vacation next week, and I'm trying to work it so that I'm within like 40 to an hour, you know, 40 minutes to an hour drive of a theater on Friday. So I have to, you know, something with decent sound, like you had said. Because
man, so if you're an hour away from the theater, you're gonna spend like 5 hours.
It'll be, going to see this movie. It'll be five. Yes, yeah, so it'll be 1 hour of hype driving, and then you're gonna sit in the theater for half an hour to 45 minutes.
True. Right, exactly.
that he got a near 3-hour movie, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So, Mac, just out of curiosity, where's your hype level for this at?
Yeah, you know, I'm still kind of on the fence. I'll see it, of course, but it's just, you know, they really hit a home run with Dark Knight, and it's like, how on earth are they going to top it, you know?
But Mac, what if they do, Mac?
I don't know.
Also keep in mind that after Dark Knight, he made Inception, which is a great movie.
He's not really, he's not like, I don't think he's peaked with Dark Knight, I guess that's the thing, you know?
I'm remembering the fan backlash to Spider-Man 3 and all that, and I'm like, I'd hate for that to happen to Batman.
Yeah, but you know that was a lot of that was what studio interference, and it wasn't all Sam Raimi's fault. This is Christopher Nolan. They must just give him carte blanche. Just do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's right.
You made The Dark Knight. Do whatever you want. We don't want
to cast Jerry Sandusky as Commissioner.
Oh boy,
Daryl, you are a Batman guy.
You know, I like Batman Begins, and I like Dark Knight better than Batman Begins. But to be perfectly honest, I thought Dark Knight was about 35 minutes too long, and they could have made two movies out of it between the big false finish and the Two-Face business. They could have two separate movies, and I wish they'd just done that.
I thought the same thing when I saw it the first time, and now that I know what to expect, I think it's great. So.
Part of it's too that I have a hard time with major big money or big money movies. I don't know, blockbuster movies being 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Well, hey, if it's Transformers 2, I think you definitely have a great argument.
But you know, I mean, I'm used to a lot of I'm used to a lot of older movies, and a lot of older movies are like 70 and 80 minutes long. And I think you can tell just as good a story in 70, 80 minutes. And it's that's a trend that started with Star Wars, if you ask me.
But long, like bloated?
Long. 2:50, not bloated necessarily, but two and a half hour science fiction movies, 2 and 2.5 hour comic book movies.
All I know is I paid $10 just for a regular screening of Spider-Man. So at this point, you know, I just feel like I deserve to sit in that theater for a longer period of time.
Even if
it's a total brain.
Yeah. And I hate to be a curmudgeon about it, but I will see it.
You will enjoy it, Daryl. Yes,
probably, but I'm also not the Christopher Nolan fan that you guys are.
That's right. I'm with you, Daryl, for the most part. I think that movies have become bloated, and even watching Dark Knight last night, knowing the scope of the movie, it does get to a point where it's like, boy, there's a lot of this movie left, because it's like Harvey Dent turns into Two-Face, and there's like an hour. There's like an hour left.
An hour after that. That's what I'm saying. You could have just extended that, made another movie. You could have made even more money that way. You can have a third more showings in the theater if your movie's shorter, and you can release two movies. And
I don't know. I'm not a big
split it. Did I tell you how I got these credits? You know.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't. I'm not a big fan of these two part movies.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the worst.
They are the worst. And we could blame the Matrix for that too. By the way.
Yeah.
So. All right, Eric, did you have anything else?
Oh, the only thing I wanted to say, non-movie related, very quickly, we have started watching season 3 of Justified. We bought it off of Amazon, so we're 7 episodes in, about halfway through.
Okay, which was the most recent season, yes?
Yeah, most recent one, and I like it a lot.
Neil McDonald, right? Neil McDonald brings it.
Oh, wait, who's he, Quarles?
Yes, Quarles, that's it.
He's great. It's definitely... It's not less focused. There are more characters, it seems like, at play in this season, maybe than the last one. I don't know. For some reason, my recollection of season 2 was I was really kind of focused on, you know, the Bennets and Gordon Rayl. It was very kind of – this one, you have a lot of different players. New people come in, and Limehouse is great. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it ends up.
I don't know if this occurred to you as you watched, Eric, but, I mean, does it seem like they tried to – de-emasculate Raylan a little. I mean, that was one of my arguments, like criticism in the second season. Like, yep. He was just kind of adult, you know, and it was weird. And they seemed to really kind of torque up his badassness in this third season.
Yeah, I think that they made me care about his relationship with Winona enough where it wasn't all focused on it, and there's all that weird, all that stupid subplot in season 2. I think it's. He's back and better than ever.
That's right. He's not toothless. That's right. Yeah. All right, Daryl. What else? What do you got? Oh, I got to talk to you.
Yeah, that's Prometheus as well.
I got Dark Knight on the brain. I can't even think straight. So I was going to talk Spider-Man too. So I pretty much said my piece. I don't think there's, you know, actually I'm trying to think. What is the post Dark Knight Rises movie landscape look like?
Expendables.
Expendables and
yeah.
I mean, is that it though? Right.
Well, I mean,
the Hobbit for Christmas, right? So
I guess as far as big-ish movies, I mean, there's that Total Recall remake that looks terrible.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, we'll see. I am hoping for maybe a Man of Steel trailer on Dark Knight Rises. That'd be kind of cool. I mean, that's going to be something that'll get a lot of scrutiny, I'm sure. But all right, moving on. Stuff we got for the site. Mac, what do you got?
Yeah, just released on Blu-ray is from the 80s, Outland, starring Sean Connery.
Oh, wow, yes.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool movie. It's just basically it's High Noon, but set in space. It takes place. It's the visuals are kind of evocative of Alien. You know, it kind of looks like that movie, but it takes place on this small mining station on one of the moons of Jupiter. And Sean Connery is the marshal who comes in to like clean up the place. But there's all this corruption, and then the hired thugs come in on the next shuttle to take him out. You know, just like in High Noon, like bad guys come in on the train. You know,
it does sound vaguely familiar.
Yeah. But even though it's really evocative of so many other movies, it's still really good, and mostly because Sean Connery is just awesome in this. He's just the ultimate tough guy. I mean, nobody can throw a punch quite like Sean Connery can. There's a great bit where he's fighting a guy in a kitchen, and the two guys, they're just like wailing on each other until Sean Connery gets a hold of the shotgun, points at the guy, and says, "Think about it." It's like, oh, yeah. Nice. Ultimate tough guy.
Are you telling me Under Siege totally ripped off the kitchen fight in Outland? Is that what you're saying? Nice. All right. Eric, how about you?
This week I am reviewing the new Mystery Science Theater set, Volume 24.
Now, the real question is, who's got a bigger collection, Eric and his Mystery Science Theater or Mac and his Ben 10 collection?
Got to be Mac and his Ben 10 collection.
Let's see, 24...
Oof.
Well, I don't have all 24 of the volumes.
Okay, all right. Well, you got a ways to go.
I do. I think I only have like 12, 13, something like that.
So it's nothing to sneeze at. But one of those has, do they have three movies on it? Is that
how? Four. Yeah.
Four, okay, wow. All right.
So this latest one, Mac, you'll appreciate this. It's got both of the Fugitive Alien movies.
Oh yes.
So a lot of people try to be killed by forklifts and so on. They sing that song so many times. It's great. And it's also got another Sword and the Dragon, which is one of the, I think it's called the Russo-Finnish Troika. It's like a series of these, and that's what they refer to it as. It's a series of these like Finnish like fantasy movies. Voyage of Sinbad, which was one of the recent sets, had these really kind of relatively elaborate production values. It still looks really cheap, but these sort of fairy tale fantasy movies.
What's that Sinbad one called?
I think it's called The Voyage of Sinbad.
Okay, it's not the Magic Voyage of Sinbad, is it?
Oh, no, I think it is a Magic Voyage. Sorry, yeah, The Magic Voyage of Sinbad.
Oh, that movie is insane. I got that in my War Gods collection.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's insane. There's like a bird like a with a woman's head on it.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's insane. What it was, I think it was a movie that had nothing to do with Sinbad. It was like a Russian movie, or maybe
exactly. Yeah,
right.
And they just reskinned it. It was like Super Mario Brothers.
Some Russian folk hero, but they, in the dubbing, they renamed him Sinbad.
Yes. that's great. That's one. That movie's insanity.
So Sword and the Dragon is kind of like that. It's not quite as good as Magic Voyage of Sinbad. And then the last one is called Samson versus the Vampire Women, which is
notable
primarily because it's TV Frank's last episode. So. TV's Frank's last episode. That's a lot of possessive, but that's what I'm reviewing.
All right, good. Daryl.
A couple of FX shows this week. The second season of Louie, which I love, and is a really good season. And it gets darker and darker all the time.
That's an achievement with that show.
Well, and with the first two episodes of the third season, it seems to be continuing that trend. Which have been pretty awful on the poor guy. and then Wilfred.
Yeah, right. Elijah Wood, right?
Elijah Wood and what's his name? An Australian actor named Jason Gann, who did the show in Australia previously.
How many of us wanted to jump in and say Yahoo Serious just now?
It was there.
It's either going to be him or Paul Hogan. Two answers. But I didn't know how I was going to feel about the show. I thought the concept was funny, which is basically just that a guy is fails at killing himself, and then his neighbor comes over asking him to watch her dog, and to everybody else, it's a dog. But to Elijah Wood, it's this Australian guy in a dog suit taking bong hits and things. And so it's a really odd concept. I thought it would be a one-note kind of thing, but over the course of the season, they keep it going really well, and Jason Gann is really good in that dog suit. It's definitely a show worth watching. I'm not done with the season yet, but I'm about two-thirds of the way through, and it's definitely a positive.
All right.
Definitely a positive.
Well, the only thing of note I'll mention here is Eric already experienced this, but this is the first time I never actually watched this show growing up, so this is totally new, but G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Season 2. And I remember, Eric, you just describing, like, Snake Eyes dressing in drag for an episode. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Now, see, aren't you reviewing, like, it's like the second series.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think they just brought it back later because I reviewed season two of the original series. So I guess I think they just did it again.
It's definitely old school. It's not like okay, that's interesting. But it is fantastic. I don't think the plot's improved much. One of my favorites was Cobra's diabolical plan. They were burning school books and replacing them with history books that have Cobra Commander like photoshopped into famous. Hawk or someone opens up this book and it's Cobra Commander crossing the Delaware River.
Awesome.
Their whole diabolical plan.
Second series, do they have any of those like multi-part episodes?
Oh yeah, they have a lot of great ones. One is called Long Live Rock and Roll, and this involves Cobra finding a heavy metal singer to blow it, like to liquefy New York City using a powerful amplifier and his guitar book.
That wound up basically being a Metalocalypse episode later.
But my favorite, and probably one of the all-time best, has got to be The Greatest Evil, Part 1 and 2, where Cobra and G.I. Joe join forces to take out a drug dealer. It is like the war on drugs. Very special.
Is there a Nancy Reagan cameo?
I did not see her, but she did make it. She did make it into my review, which is happening. Here's a quote actually, which I say for posterity's sake. Duke, and so Duke and a commando, they're in a fight, and like in all G.I. Joe episodes, like their planes like crash and explode, but they jump out just in the nick of time, right, in the parachute. So they're kind of having this midair fight. And Duke says, "If I weren't so upset with my stupid brother and his drug problems, this would have never happened." And then Cobra Commander says, "G.I. Joe's family has drug problems? Join the club." So they land, and they kind of talk this out. And this is a Cobra Commander. This is just some commando guy. And I think he actually says, you know, like, my sister Cindy is struggling with his drugs as well. So Cobra and G.I. Joe decide to join forces against this greatest evil. They actually hold a press conference to do it. So there's Cobra Commander, this terrorist who's always, you know, is a constant existential threat to the globe. He's just kind of standing there at a podium, you know, I mean, I don't know, just take it, you know, shoot him or arrest him or something. But anyway, so it's a massive two-parter, and That is fantastic. And then just a couple of notes. Another episode called Kindergarten Commandos.
That is good. That kind of writes itself, really.
This is Cobra looking to, and I'm not joking, raise a child army. he goes into schools and playgrounds and kidnaps these children so he can train them to be Cobra. You know, to be Cobra.
Well, now that they're not on drugs, they need something to do.
They need something, absolutely.
Are they led by Coney Commander?
Yeah, unfortunately.
No. Okay.
Just fantastic. So yeah, just fantastic stuff. So, really just really can't recommend it highly or lowly enough. Okay, moving on, Mac. Why don't you take us elsewhere?
Sure. Well, first, I just counted, and there are 18 volumes total of Ben 10, if you count the three series. Okay. So you're getting a better value with Mystery Science Theater. But moving on from there, we're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down to the cover art gallery for July 17th. We're just going to talk about whatever we see on the list here.
Oh, we got Hard to Kill.
Oh, that was, yes, that's an excellent Seagal movie.
Seagal and Kelly LeBrock, can't go wrong there.
Wow.
Is that his first big one?
I think that was his first big one. That's the first
one. That kind
of
where he stormed on the scene, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ponytail and everything. Yeah. Killing it.
Very live.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. No, of course not. He's got a great, great action hero name. As I read the product description here, Detective Mason Storm. here's a movie that kind of appealed to me is Luc Besson or whatever, The Lockout, the futuristic prison movie. But I guess it just got savage in the reviews. But
That came and went pretty quick.
Yeah. It was like in our cheap seat theater in the blink of an eye. So.
And Lone Wolf McQuaid, speaking of other old cruddy action movies, with Norris and Carradine, David Carradine.
Nice.
For the classic movie fan, Singing in the Rain has got an all-new Blu-ray 60th anniversary version.
And we've got the 1950s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers from Don Siegel. It's a real great 50s sci-fi.
Oh, yeah, that'll be worth looking at.
What's this Will Ferrell movie? Casa Padre.
That's the one he did all in Spanish.
That's right. It's in the style of a Spanish soap opera, right?
Yeah, and it's on DVD this quickly is pretty surprising. I guess it shouldn't be that surprising anymore, but I didn't expect to see it on there.
Now, a release I'm very excited to see, even though I do not get the cover art. It's right next to Casa Padre. Cellular. One of my favorite kind of little underrated films in the last few years, Chris Evans and Kim Basinger. I don't know if you guys have seen this one. She's kidnapped and she just has one call to make. She gets hold of this kid played by Chris Evans on a cell phone, and then it's just kind of this big action. William H. Macy's in it. I really like. It's just one of our favorites around the household here. We just love this movie. So I've been waiting for this on Blu-ray, but is that the cover art?
This is probably not the final cover art. If it is, it looks like a drop call to me.
It's like the Spinal Tap, right?
It's like how much more black could it be?
Well, I'm very excited about that. Even if that is a terrible color cover art, we'll purchase it. But I really highly recommend that.
And if you really want to torture yourself, you have the new Hollywood version of The Three Stooges that came out earlier this year.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about losing your luster. That's a Farrelly Brothers movie. You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't long those guys were on top of the world. How about this movie, Dark Relic? You click on it, you get no cover art, no description of it, and it's $34. What can Dark Relic be? That's what I wonder.
Dark Relic. I would say at $34, it is significantly overpriced.
Okay.
It's some old. It looks like a Crusaders movie with some guy named James Frayne.
Okay. All right.
So yeah. I would stay away, but he was in Tron Legacy, so there's that.
Speaking of overpriced, whatever Doomsday Prophecy costs, it'll be. That's another one I just recently reviewed, and I give up.
Oh, man, the Empire State Building is like drowning in lava.
Yeah.
Wow. It's with a black hole, it looks like, too.
That's right. I'll spoil it for you, but let's see, who's in this movie? The only person I recognized was the girl from Firefly?
Jewel State.
Yeah, Jewel State was in this movie. So basically, the galactic equator is aligning with our solar system. So that's screwing everything up. Yet, the way to defeat this, apparently, or to prevent the extinction of all mankind, is using a Native American rod that tells the future. and you insert it in the right place, like in a Catskill somewhere, and a bunch of the Easter Island head statues pop out of the ground and fire lasers in the air. So that actually helps.
That seems like a stretch.
So it's based on a true story.
Actually, you lost me at Galactic Equator. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Someone Wikipedia that. I didn't even want to bother doing that. I'll be right up front with that. I didn't do the science research. So. All right. Well, actually, yeah, a lot of stuff here. Feel free to purchase and support The Verdict. Gentlemen, inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Daryl, what do you got?
This is harder than it should be, I think. There's not a lot that's really getting me that's not advertent, which I've had a problem with in the past.
I've got one, but I don't think it's going to make it past you guys, but we'll see.
All right, I'm going to go with...
Well, you're really struggling, aren't you?
I am struggling.
This is good radio.
It is good radio. I'm going to go with the In-Betweeners.
So there you go, not bad, not bad. Mac?
How about Designing Women?
Okay. Kind of a weird science fanfic kind of a thing.
I guess all it does is conjure up images of Delta Birch. Right? Eric?
This might be the one you were talking about, Virgin Alexander.
It's not.
No, okay, good.
Hold on. I'm going to go with right next to the In-Betweeners there, Intruders.
No, there you go.
Pretty good layup there. Okay. So that is that. So let's go on to our ambush topics, random topics thrown at each other. I'll kick it off, seeing that we talked about the flames of fandom that are fanning for Dark Knight Rises. Relay any kind of anecdote, good, positive, whatever, involving a movie that you were just dying to see. You were looking forward to it. I mean, not even looking forward to it, but it was a movie that was coming out. And so the day of that movie, going to see it, some kind of interesting anecdote about it. That experience seeing the movie.
Yeah, okay. When the movie Dark City came out, you know, the Alex Proyas?
Oh, yeah.
I was a big fan of The Crow, and I was really looking forward to Dark City, even though it was, like, dumped into a January release.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot of studio marketing for it. I was still just pumped to see it because I was really into Alex Proyas. And the thing is, it was January, and we had the blizzard coming through in what in Massachusetts we call the Nor'easter.
Nice.
This huge, huge blizzard. It was, like, 10 inches of snow. But nonetheless, I got in my car. I drove in the snow, the slip sliding all over the ice, everything.
Was it death-defying?
It was death-defying, yeah. It was pretty hairy. And made it to the theater. It was miraculously open. There was even a small scattering of people there, and I got to see the movie. It was like the 11 a.m. show, too.
And I love Dark City. Did it live up to your expectations?
I really like the movie. Still like it today.
Yeah. Again, all right. So...
I was worried that the power would go out during the movie. It really sucked.
Now, were there just some miserable-looking attendants there, you know, taking your tickets?
Yeah, even more than usual.
Yeah, they must have been hating their life so much.
I wasn't the only person at the movies that day. There were a couple others there, too.
All right. So back in, I guess it was 98 or 99 when Eyes Wide Shut came out, I was a big Kubrick fan growing up, and it was his first movie in whatever, 14 years. So I was super excited to go see it. I was living in Santa Fe and went to the theater to see it. Fairly early showing, I was by myself. I was the only person in the theater except for one row of the theater taken up by 12 or 14 Sikhs. you know, the Hindu sect, and nobody else in the theater, but me and these, like, 14 Sikhs. So I watched it and went home afterwards and had planned to see the movie again the next day with my friends. And so we went to see the movie the next day with friends, all together. And it was me and about six other people. And this time it was a better showing. You know, it was a better time. So there was maybe, like, 30 people in the theater, but in that same basic place in the theater as the day before, there was another whole row of Sikhs. And I have never been able to explain that to myself.
So is Eyes Wide Shut huge in the Sikh community?
Apparently. I have no way to explain that.
Yeah, but. That actually sounds like a scene from a Kubrick movie.
Yeah. Ironically. And they all start following me afterwards for the final of that.
All right, good one. Nice.
Oh man, I got nothing that's as good as either of those. It's too bad. I got no Sikhs. That whole thing sounds like a setup to, like an elaborate setup to a really dumb punchline, but you never, I don't know what it'd be. Are these Sikh saves? Something like that, but I don't. Okay, so one of my earliest memories, when I must have been pretty young, when Return of the Jedi came out, but I distinctly remember, like, getting up out of bed and, like, sneaking into the living room. I don't know why I was sneaking, but it was all part of this, like, I wanted to see it, like, as soon as possible. I don't know, I had this memory of, like, crawling on my hands and knees and peeking around the corner to see if my dad was in the living room. I don't think, maybe I was going to ask him if we could go. I don't know what it was, but, like,
you have a huge grasp on the concept of time then at that age. Is that what you're saying?
Not really, and, but I just remember, like, wanting to see that really, really badly. I mean, that was 83, so I was 6? Is that possible? I guess. So there you go.
That's not bad. No, not bad.
My earliest childhood memories ties to a movie. Is that okay?
That works. I don't think mine is that great. But Return of the King. Man, Return of the King, right? That was it. It was the end of the trilogy. And, forget 3 months waiting. This was, after Fellowship of the Ring was so awesome, it was like, oh, you're waiting 2.5 years for this or whatever. So finally get in there. It's a packed house. Down in the stadium seating in Methuen, every single seat is taken. So I sit down. It's, a 3-hour-plus movie, as we talk about huge, long movies, right? Mm-hmm. I am just sitting next to a guy who's got some kind of nasal problem. And he's breathing so loud through his, through his nose. And it is so loud. And it was like something you would probably find happening in Guantanamo or some place where a poor bastard gets renditioned to, because I just could not, it was, you try to get into it and then it's like that. It was pretty, maybe the poor guy had some, legit nasal disease. So, but that ruined it for me. That ruined my time in that movie.
There's nothing like a bad theater experience to really.
Yeah, I mean, like your experience.
Exactly.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad theater experience. That's right. All right. I don't know, Eric, what do you got?
Hopefully I can come up with something good for this one, too. So, inspired by Amazing Spider-Man, memorable reptiles in movies.
Hmm. Well, going back to Mystery Science Theater, you remember the giant Gila monster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, another great 50s sci-fi. Which is it's like total 50s because the big finale has the rebellious teenager with the perfect hair. He has to sacrifice his hot rod in order to stop the monster.
Right, I'll go with the alligators in Eraser. Remember that Schwarzenegger movie?
Oh yeah.
The clumsily CGI.
Early CGI.
Proto CGI alligators. And I'm pretty sure Schwarzenegger punched one of them in the face. I know they definitely ate a lot of guys. It was actually kind of an interesting idea for an action movie, but yeah, they were just so big and ridiculous. It just looked so fake. It was tough to really suspend your disbelief.
Did he actually punch one?
I thought he did, but maybe not. Maybe not. Because that's the only thing I really remember about that movie.
Now I have an excuse to watch Eraser again.
Yeah, congrats.
All right, I'm going to go with I don't know if you really – it's a reptile monster, so I'm saying it counts. But the Crater Lake Monster, it was popular growing up for me because Crater Lake's in Oregon. That's where I'm from. But it's basically a Loch Ness Monster movie where it's a bunch of hicks sitting around a lake. And then gratuitous stock shots of stop motion Loch Ness monster-y thing, and then a bunch of screaming.
Nice.
So, Crater Lake Monster, Oregon famous.
How old is that one? Is that
77?
So, oh wow.
I think it's actually probably it was. I would guess it was originally known as something else, and then it was co-opted by some West Coast distributor. And called that back in the 70s. Because it has nothing to do with Crater Lake. It clearly doesn't take place in Oregon.
Yes, I reviewed that movie.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Nice. It's for you.
That's right. It was a double... Yes, there it is. It was a double billing with a movie called Galaxina.
It's another Oregon classic.
I don't know, it could be. Yeah. I was just looking over, looking over this. Yeah. But a little trivia fact about that movie, Galaxy. You know, the ship's commander is named, apparently, and I don't remember this, I was looking at the view, Captain Cornelius Butt. So, there you go. That movie had the Crater Lake Monster getting killed by a snowplow.
Yeah. And there is snow on Crater Lake, so that's...
okay, there you go. So, again, as Eric would say, based on a true story.
See, if I'd known that, I could have tied that in with the forklift thing from Mystery Science Theater, because it's, I don't know, death by something.
Give me forklifts.
Non-car vehicles.
Give me forklifts and give me a chance to talk about Pit Fighter, which it's been a long
time. That's true. Need a forklift to pick up all that money.
That's right.
I guess I was sort of thinking some of the top-level ones, thinking of snakes in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Good.
You could obviously go with the crocodiles, right, in Temple of Doom?
That's right. Both occurred to me as well, right? Was there any reptilian representation in Last Crusade?
I don't know.
Well, there were more snakes at the beginning.
There were more snakes.
In the train.
Yeah, that's correct. Good one, yes. And then we're going to count the aliens in the fourth movie as reptiles.
They have absolutely reptiles.
Okay, Mac, what do you got?
I'll see Eric one better and do famous spiders.
Ooh, spiders. Well, this is the entirety of arachnophobia.
Yeah, just going to say it.
Yeah, that's the easy way out.
Easy Way Out is my middle name.
It's a pretty fun movie, you know?
Right? It is a fun movie.
A long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, I think that still holds. I've caught it on TV. And it's one of those movies you just sit down and just kind of keep watching. So, there's an obvious. I guess I could go with the obvious one. I don't know. You got one, Daryl?
I'm still thinking.
You should go with the obvious one so I don't feel so bad.
Well, I was going to go with Lord of the Rings, Shelob.
Right? Oh, yeah.
But actually, there was. I'll dig up another fleeting memory of you I did called Ice Spiders. So, I don't know. And all that's ice. That's spiders and ice. So, that's all it is, really.
All right, I'm going to go with... I'm going to go back down the Mystery Science Theater route and go with Earth versus the Spider.
Oh, that's good.
When was that? From, like, 56, 58, something like that? And really bad Burt Gordon movie. And I don't. It's been a long time since I've seen it, and all I remember is that it's terrible.
sounds like a winner.
Yeah. Well, it's one spider versus the whole Earth, and I don't see how the spider has much of a chance.
All right, Mac, what's yours?
Let's see. You guys took arachnophobia already, because that was what I was going to say. The big debate with me and my friend after the movie was whether or not the really huge spider at the end was a real spider or an animatronic.
Was it a mixture of the both? Was it a mixture of the two?
My friend keeps insisting that, you know, dude, it was a real spider. They grow that big, and they trained it to jump through the air and stuff. And I'm like,
there's definitely a few scenes where it's running around the ground, and you can tell that it's like it's some kind of robot in a track. Somewhere.
Now, right, now, Dave, when you say they combine the two, are you saying they made a cyborg?
They did.
I had no idea. That movie's amazing.
Just like, I mean, they used the technology when they made the real hoverboards from Back to the Future.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you know, and they adapted it to make cyborg spiders. Hollywood is full of amazing researchers, so as everyone knows, a lot of science up there.
I mean, they built Tom Cruise, so I guess
they built that. That's right.
That's topical.
That was good. We need a Tomcat joke.
Tomcat.
Okay, Daryl, wrap us up.
All right, I'm going. Weird siblings. It's not inspired by anything except the idea of a weird sibling.
All right. Okay. Because we've already established you have neither friends nor family. So.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about siblings. Except from the movies, and I find them mostly weird.
I think, Dave, you may have reviewed this movie, too, a long time ago. Blades of Glory.
Yep.
Has Will Arnett and Amy Poehler as some kind of creepy brother and sister skating combo. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that was that was the movie surprisingly funny to me.
I agree.
I liked it.
I was going to like that at all, but I really did. I actually saw that with my brother to add to the depth of that.
That's right.
And you guys are obviously Oregon's premier skating team. Right. So.
Of course we are, and it's a little weird.
Yeah, it's definitely weird.
The Grand Curtain Call of John Heater, too, I think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I'm going to go with the obvious one to me, and that's, of course, Small Wonder. You know? Vicky or whatever her name
is. Vicky the Robot.
Vicky the Robot, yeah, from Small Wonder. I mean, that's pretty odd. It's got its awkward family moments. Right?
It's a really awkward show altogether.
Very awkward. That's right. Nothing is good about that movie. Just like, and even thinking of the making of that show. Like,
oh my god!
This real girl, you know, acting is odd. And the whole thing is upsetting. Yes.
I think at one point it was just supposed to be a normal show, but the girl couldn't act at all.
Maybe
she's so really robot. Like
well, yeah, the Schwarzenegger Terminator. Yeah, I think you might be onto something. It does have it's got a theme song that needs to be listened to be believed, though.
It's a great song.
That is something.
Yeah, it's a great song. And I think it can be easily YouTubed.
That is rough. Yeah. that's a rough out.
Is it one of those really long ones from those 80s sitcoms?
It's an amazing juxtaposition of like the horror you're watching of this family that has built a small girl. Raises her own and to you know be a sibling to their only child with like and it's just like this old fashioned. It sounds like a commercial for Bounty paper towels or something. I don't know. I can't really do it justice, but yeah, Google that. That's something.
Yeah, it's easily YouTubeable. So I have it up here. I'll be listening to it in a couple of minutes.
YouTubeable. YouTubeable. Yeah. YouTubeable.
Okay, let's see. Siblings. I've gotten caught up on Game of Thrones now. I got the first season on Blu-ray. So how about all the Jaime and Cersei Lannister and their secret?
Yeah, that's not a show that strays away from weird familial stuff.
Right. Yeah. No, it's
just to put it in the most vague, delicate terms possible.
Yeah, we'll dance around that. We'll dance around that. All right, Daryl, what's yours?
An old favorite of mine, old cult horror movie, Basket Case.
Oh, yeah. It's a classic.
Yes, it's about a kid who carries, or a guy who carries his formerly congenital twin brother in a basket next to him and is looking for revenge on the doctors who cut them apart. And it's gruesome and extremely weird and extremely cheap. And really, for my taste, pretty special.
Nice.
Pretty special. There's three of them, but three basket cases, but I would only watch the first two.
You're pure. You're a basket case purist.
Yeah. It really ruins the mythology in the third one. Like, it's like if you ever saw It's Alive, it's like Island of the Alive. It's just not.
Ouch.
You can't have a whole Island of the Alive.
Is it Halloween Season of the Witch? Is that what you're talking about? Is it that level of mythology?
No, I'd probably take Halloween Season of the Witch.
You would?
Take Island of the Alive or Basket Case 3.
That's a pretty good movie.
A Season of the Witch?
Yeah.
All right, good.
It's just not Michael Myers. But.
That's a small detail, really.
Well, that was a titling error. They just called it Season of the Witch. Everybody be happy.
That's right, yeah. Oh, man. Okay, well, before we launch into a Season of the Witch discussion, I guess we should probably wrap this up. So thank you to Mac, Eric, and Daryl. Hope everybody, again, had a great holiday. Hope everyone is primed for Dark Knight Rises. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email address. And with that, Mac, take us away.
With great power comes great responsibility.